each meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from the little cave on the tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing on the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it always has been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let's now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and author of A Mother's Plea, For the Winds Have Changed. Together we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
And good afternoon. This is Mary Hallin Fiorito. I am the Cardinal Francis George Fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center in Washington, D.C., and it is my privilege to be sitting in today for Father Anthony here on Winds of Change on listener-supported WNDZ AM 750. And I have a very special guest in the studio with me today, Dominican Father Tom McDermott, who is a nationally recognized expert on St. Catherine of Siena, whom we're going to be discussing today. Father Tom, welcome.
Thank you, Mary. Nice to be here.
It's wonderful to have you. And Father Tom, whenever I have a priest or a religious on the show, I always like to begin by asking that person to share a little bit about their vocation story. Can you tell us how you came to meet the Dominicans?
Well, it's a kind of interesting story. In a sense, I'm a revert. I was baptized secretly by an uncle of mine who was a devout Catholic. He did so on the instructions of my Catholic grandparents, paternal grandparents, without the knowledge of my mom and dad, who went on to raise me as a Lutheran. And then around the time of my ordination, my uncle fessed up, so to speak, to admit that he had secretly baptized me. And of course, I was delighted. But by then, I had also been baptized as a Lutheran. I went to a Catholic college, St. John's University in Collegeville, Minnesota. In high school, I had developed an interest in theology, and seemed that it was only Catholic schools that taught the subject on the undergraduate level. School I chose to go to was St. John's University in Collegeville, Minnesota, which was run by Benedictine monks. And there I had a roommate who years later became my provincial in the Dominican Order, Father Charles Bouchard. We were roommates. I knew nothing about the Dominican Order. I wasn't even a Catholic yet. One thing led to another. I became a Catholic. I went down to see him as a seminarian, or student brother, as we call it, in Dubuque, Iowa. I liked what I saw, and 3 years after he joined, I joined the Dominican Order. It was ordained in St. Louis in 1983. So that, in a nutshell, Mary, is my vocation story.
Mm. Well, how did you first come to feel that you had a vocation, where, you know, you thought, not only am I happy I'm Catholic, but I think I'd like to go whole hog and be a priest?
Well, that's an interesting story. My mother was a practicing Lutheran, and she would take me to her service every Sunday, but there was no discussion about the faith.
Were you Missouri Synod, or were you ELCA?
No, we were what became ELCA.
Okay.
And but there was no discussion. There was infrequent family prayer, usually at Thanksgiving and Christmas. And, of course, my father was a Catholic the whole time, but he had fallen away from his faith, apparently. He did come back towards the end of his life after I was studying for the priesthood. And religion didn't seem to be a lived commodity in our house. It was just something that respectable people do on Sunday.
Okay.
But I was interested in the subject, and I can remember reading an early modern translation in English of the New Testament, Good News for Modern Man. I was a reader as a kid. I read that when I was like a sophomore in high school, and I was just I was intrigued because it had the ring of truth about it. And that really was the beginning of my taking my Christian faith seriously.
So it was a real intellectual conversion or reversion.
Well, intellectual and emotional.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, spiritual would be a better way of saying
okay.
it, you know. And I just thought that, look, the accounts in this book called the New Testament, they sound true to me. I think these men and women really thought they did encounter God. And indeed they did, we we say, as believers. And that set the ball rolling, and then I decided, well, what church? And spent some time in the Episcopal Church. And then by the time I finished college, having gotten a degree in Catholic theology, in effect, I decided it was time to become a Roman Catholic.
Hmm. And then how long from that point onward did you become a priest? Well, first, the Dominican, you know, training, if you will, is a long process, correct?
It's long. We don't accept anyone who's not yet a college graduate.
Okay.
So you enter, then you spend about 5 years studying philosophy and theology after your novitiate, which is a one-year program. So I entered the Dominican Order, I think, just about a year after my formal conversion to Catholicism, which is very fast, and I don't even think it's allowed anymore. But I did, and when I think back on it, I didn't know a whole lot about the Dominican Order. I'm not even sure what I knew anymore about St. Dominic. But I can't think of a better order to join than the one I joined, and I'm sure it was the work of God that led me there.
Right.
The Order of Preachers, St. Dominic, started in the 13th century.
Right. Well, it's funny. It reminds me a little bit of say, somebody who's just graduated from college and is completely in love with the person they're dating, and they get married, and then, 20 years later, they look back and say, I can't believe we were, like, that young and got married,
Exactly.
Knowing how serious the commitment was. It sounds very similar.
Right. I joined the order when I was 24, and I think it was the only right thing I had done in my life up to that point. But humanly speaking, I didn't have very many strong reasons.
Mm-hmm.
Or reasons for staying. My reasons for staying are, I suppose, very different from my reasons for entering, because we've matured. We've all matured. But I've always been very grateful that this is the order I entered, because it suits me, fits me just like a glove.
Yeah. I think a lot of married couples would sort of say the same thing, like, looking back, you can't imagine not being with this person, but when you think about how young you were or how little you really knew, I mean, it takes a long time to really get to know a person, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that sounds very similar. Now, Father, I know, here's the other thing I think our listeners will find fascinating about you. I know you are from Nebraska, which is not necessarily fascinating, but you have a terrific hobby, and that's beekeeping. The beekeeping Dominican convert priest. Can you talk a little bit about how you came to be interested in beekeeping?
Well, first, I want to stand up for my state.
It is fascinating. Corn is a fascinating. What would our world be like without corn?
And soybeans.
Or corn huskers,
and cattle,
right.
And I also want to point out, since we're broadcasting from Chicago, that it wasn't until a Nebraskan bought the Cubs that they won their second World Series.
Oh, Father.
And that's the Ricketts family.
You had to go there, Father.
That's
okay.
The Ricketts family,
yes,
from
that's
Nebraska.
Right. They are.
So we have to give due credit here.
Right. And the Ricketts family is building a wonderful new retreat center, Jesuit,
yes,
retreat center, Cloisters, right, on the Platte.
Right.
Multi-million dollar retreat
center.
Yeah.
And,
so good for them. They take their faith very seriously, don't they?
They do.
Yeah.
And one of the sons of the patriarch of the family, whose name I forget right now, is the governor of our state, Governor Ricketts. But anyway, I haven't lived in Nebraska for many years, but
What town were you from in Nebraska?
I was from a little town called Wayne,
okay,
which has about 5,000 people now, not too far from where Johnny Carson's from, Norfolk, Nebraska. So it's a nice place to be from. It's kind of sleepy. It certainly doesn't bear any resemblance to Chicago, where I live now. But anyway, when I was growing up as a kid, I could see off in the fields these little white boxes, and I came to learn that these were beehives.
Mm-hmm.
And there wasn't a tremendous lot of them, but, enough. And I didn't know anybody to ask to bring me to see them, and I was afraid of them anyway. But I always thought it was kind of curious. You see collections of these white boxes, and sometimes some would be taller than others, And then my first assignment, that's another story, was to Lagos, Nigeria as a priest. And there I got to know a fellow American Dominican who was into beekeeping and had come up with a way to make hives locally with products that were, or raw materials that were available in West Africa. And I think he at one point had more than 100 hives.
Right.
I didn't get into it at that point, but I said to myself, if I ever come back to the States and I have an opportunity to do beekeeping, I want to do it. So got into that about 5 or 6 years ago.
Yeah. It's as I read more and more about the benefits of natural foods, Father and I, listeners, were discussing off air, my kids have some health concerns that require them to eat in a very healthy way. And I have read a lot about really the kind of miraculous properties of honey.
Mm-hmm.
It being a very, almost a perfect food, if you will.
Yeah. You hear that. I don't know if it's been scientifically proven yet,
right.
But sometimes people with allergies claim that locally produced honey, you know, reduces the irritation of an allergy.
Right, and they have, it also has kind of antimicrobial properties and mm-hmm. anti-inflammatory properties, certainly. So a lot of people are deriving great health benefits from honey. So, and again, as you point out, especially locally grown honey for the people who live in that area.
Right.
And at some grocery stores, you'll see some types of honey that sell for, you know, $20 or $30 a jar.
Yeah, right.
So, you know, the particularly coveted types of honey are very much in demand. So that's that'll keep the order going, Father, if anything should ever happen. Your honey, your bees.
I don't think my two humble hives are going to make any difference.
And, how much honey do you get from your two hives each year?
Well, one year I got 11 gallons, but for the last 2 years, the two hives have only produced 3 gallons, and that's
wow.
pitiful. And I think it has something to do with colony collapse disorder, what's affecting the bees nationwide.
Yeah.
So
it's even affecting us here in the Midwest.
Yeah,
That is really something. Well, all right. Well, thank you, Father. Thank you for indulging me and sharing that with me. I do want to talk just before we get into the books that you've written and your area of expertise, which is St. Catherine of Siena, a little bit about those years that you spent in Nigeria. Was that your first assignment as a priest?
Yes, it was. And like I said, I was ordained in 1983 in St. Louis. And at that time, our province, the province of St. Albert the Great, headquartered here in Chicago, had two missions, one in Bolivia and one in Nigeria. We had had both of them for, at that point, almost 50 years. And we're not really a missionary order, but it's one of many things that we do. And I had an opportunity as a student brother, a seminarian, to go down to Bolivia. I liked it very much. I was interested in going back after my ordination. And then I kept meeting the guys, our American priests and brothers who were working in Nigeria. And they came back. And eventually I decided to request going to Nigeria. In fact, I made that known rather early on in my Dominican vocation. When the provincial would come around every year, I'd say, "Remember me, I'm the guy that wants to go to Nigeria." So. When I was ordained, just within a matter of weeks, I found myself standing in Lagos, Nigeria. And I didn't know how long it was going to last, but it ended up lasting 18 years, 18
wow.
beautiful years of my life.
Would that be typical that you would have one assignment in the same year, in the same place for that many years?
No, it's not typical. It was unusual. But during that time, I held different positions at the same parish. I started out as an associate pastor, like most priests do, and then I was elected prior for about a year. Then I was, after that, I think I was made pastor. I was pastor for 7 years. And then I was elected provincial, the major superior. And at this point, we had about 150 Dominicans, mostly Africans from different West African countries in Nigeria and Ghana. So that was my last job. I did that for the last 4 years.
Mm-hmm. And so you have spoken sometimes about the differences between sort of typical parish life in the United States here and typical parish life in Nigeria. And one of the things I recall very clearly you're saying was the length of a Sunday Mass and how people prepare in Nigeria for Sunday Mass as opposed to what we might do here. Can you just share with our listeners who might not be familiar with that culture and the customs what a typical Sunday Mass in Nigeria was like for you in your parish?
You know, so many wonderful differences, and Africans and Nigerians in particular are wonderful people. They are so welcoming. That word welcome, either in English or one of their own many languages, is often on their tongues. And the Dominicans have a parish there. It's now staffed entirely by Nigerian Dominicans, called St. Dominic's, in a suburb of Lagos called Yaba. And incidentally, Lagos is... There's no backwater. It's a city of about 21 million people.
My goodness.
Estimated. And even when I was living there, and I left in 1997, we had, and this is incredible, if you're driving a car, any of your listeners here, hold on to your steering wheel. We had 25,000 people coming to Mass every Sunday. We didn't have any vigil Masses on Saturdays. Those were not approved by the bishops. So we had 25,000 people coming to 5 Masses on Sunday.
So 5,000 people a Mass on average.
Yes,
okay.
And the church could hold about 3,000.
Okay.
And then outside the church, we had loudspeakers set up for another 2,000 people. And this was our second church. I built the second church, and it's was built by an Italian company. It had a huge balcony that almost had as much floor space as the ground floor. It was cantilevered out over a parking lot.
Wow.
But from the first Sunday we started using it, it was too small.
Wow.
And the people are excited. They dress up. Going to church is one of the most important things.
They do all week, right?
They do all week. And even our daily masses, you know, I think now we have perhaps close to 1,000 people going to the 6:30 p.m. Mass every day. But they also have the Nigerian Dominicans, I'm told, now a 12 noon Mass and a 6:15 morning Mass. So going to church, being part of a parish community, is a big part of the lives of many African Catholics.
And just how long does the average Sunday Mass go from start to finish?
Well, our church was organized along American lines.
Okay.
American Dominicans from Chicago here, from Fenwick High School, actually, in Oak Park, set the parish up. So it was very unusual. Our Masses lasted about an hour and 10 minutes.
Okay.
But almost any other church in the country, the Mass would go significantly longer.
Yeah, I've heard 3 hours from other priest friends who served in that area.
Yes, easily. And if there's only one priest in a parish, which is often the case, you know, he would have different Mass stations to go to. He'd be driving his Volkswagen or whatever around to all these Mass stations. And there might be it might be a rainy Sunday. The roads are muddy. He can't get through on time. So the people would be waiting there for an hour at least, you know, for him to arrive.
Yeah, and we complained, you know, Father's too late for Mass, or the opening hymn goes, you know, two more verses than it should.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It really puts in perspective how fortunate we are to have so many options for Mass.
And no one left before communion.
Right.
I mean, no one left after communion either.
Right. Yeah.
They stayed to the final blessing.
Right.
And it only dawned on me my last year in Nigeria that here we had 5,000 people at Mass. For whatever reason, I never, ever heard a child cry.
My.
Yeah, never heard a child cry.
What do you attribute that to?
Well, most of the children are raised on their mother's backs.
Right.
You know, they're bundled on tied on the backs of their mothers. And I remember reading a study in a newspaper once about African children growing up with a great sense of security, which might originate, you know, in spending
that
a lot of time.
That kind of bonding, yeah.
Yeah, and the mothers take them to the market if that's where they are, and they spend hours and hours on their mother's back. And I just, you know, and I don't think
so. No need to bring toys and a bag of Cheerios and all the things American kids need to sit through a Mass. Well, Father, thank you for sharing that experience with us as well. We're going to go to our first break, and when we come back, we're going to continue our conversation with Dominican Father Thomas McDermott and his books on Catherine of Siena and Catholic spirituality. Please stay tuned. This is Mary Fiorito. I'm sitting in today for Father Anthony here on listener-supported Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
Portions of the day's programming are reproduced by means of electrical transcriptions or tape recordings.
Get in touch with God.
Get in touch with God.
Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio on.
You've got your radio turned on to Winds of Change, where you can hear about your faith and hear about today's culture through the lens of Christ's teachings with Father Anthony Bush and others. Monday through Friday at noon on AM 750. Keep Winds of Change on by going to ststandschurch.org and click on the radio tab to donate. And Winds of Change offers thanks for your donation.
The Winds of Change on AM 750. WNDZ, and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
St. Stanislaus Kostka is the sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, where you can enter into the presence of Christ 24/7. Every first Saturday afternoon will be a special opportunity for healing. At 4:30, bring your petitions for our Blessed Mother's intercession as we pray the Rosary. Then, at 5, we share the body of Christ in the Holy Mass. Also, at 5:30, a Spanish Mass, followed by a Eucharistic procession, adoration, the Divine Mercy Chaplet, and an anointing. Enter into the sacred space of St. Stanislaus Kostka and place yourself before Christ for healing. On first Saturday afternoon, starting at 4:30, find St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, 2 blocks north of Division, on Noble, just off the Kennedy in Chicago. and find peace and healing.
Welcome back. This is Mary Fiorito. I am sitting in today for Father Anthony here on Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ. And if you are just joining us, I am joined today in the studio by Dominican Father Thomas McDermott, who is the pastor of St. Vincent Ferrer Parish in River Forest, Illinois. He is, again, not only a Dominican and a pastor of a large parish and with a large parish school, but also is a published author. And Father, you have written two books, one of them on Catholic spirituality and the other on St. Catherine of Siena, who is, of course, one of the doctors of the church, one of the great great women of the Catholic Church, women saints. How did you come to be interested in St. Catherine?
Well, that's an interesting question. Before I answer it, though, I want to give a shout out to Father Anthony Bush. I hope he's listening. Father Anthony and I were in the seminary together in St. Louis years ago. And I've talked to him once on the phone that I'm aware of over the years, but I haven't seen him since. Was hoping to see him today, and I still will at some future date. So, Father Anthony, if you're listening, all the best. After 18 years of working in Nigeria and last 4 years of being provincial, I requested permission of my province to go to Rome and study. At that point, I was 46, 47 years old. And we have a large university there, Dominican University, called the Angelicum, University of St. Thomas Aquinas. And I like Rome, so I thought this would be a nice experience. I'll go there, I'll get a licentiate, which is like a master's degree. I couldn't decide if I wanted to do canon law or theology or spirituality, but I was always interested in Dominican spirituality and our saints. So eventually I opted for spirituality. Reported for my first class, which was in English. My teacher was Sister Mary O'Driscoll, an Irish sister who had taught there for many years. And the subject was St. Catherine of Siena. She was an expert, is an expert on the subject. And as I always say, it wasn't love at first sight. I had tried to read St. Catherine of Siena's famous work, The Dialogue, when I was a seminarian. New translation had come out. And I just couldn't get into it. I read it, you know, maybe 15 pages or so. But I always suspected that I was missing something and was looking for the discipline of a class that would require me to sit down and read more than I would otherwise read. And that's exactly what happened in this class. And I opted for one of the choices we had that involved reading most of the dialogue. And I was kind of slogging through the dialogue. It wasn't doing a whole lot for me. But then, ever so often, I'd come across a nugget of gold. I'd kind of wake up and say, wow, that's good stuff.
Something really resonates with you.
And then I'd read on another 10 or 15 pages and might come across another nugget of gold. And I had just enough interest at the end of the dialogue to read something more. And that was my first year in Rome. I stayed there for a total of 4 years. My first summer, I went to Siena, you know, St. Catherine of Siena.
Right.
That was kind of by accident. And there, when I wasn't studying Italian during the day, I decided to read the life of St. Catherine of Siena by a modern author. His name was Lavasti.
Okay.
It's translated into English. And by the time I finished his biography of St. Catherine, I think it's called Catherine, My Daughter, or My Daughter Catherine, I was hooked. You know, I just found this person so fascinating, so richly human,
right.
St. Catherine of Siena. Then I read Raymond of Capua's ancient biography of hers. They were contemporaries. And then I started reading the letters and the rest of it. And I was hooked. And I did my licentiate thesis on St. Catherine of Siena, but I never quite felt that I got it right. So I requested permission to stay on and do a doctorate. And in the doctorate, I think I really untangled St. Catherine of Siena and came to understand her and really appreciate her and really love her. And, you know, she lived in the 1300s. And especially when you read her letters, there are 300 letters. Some of them are 10 pages long, and they fill four volumes, hardback books, all published by the University of Arizona, incidentally. But when you read her letters, within short order, you feel like you're beginning to know this woman, that she's sitting across the table from you, that she's alive. Her personality right. comes through. And she was the kind of person, we could say many things about her, but who would do absolutely anything for God and absolutely anything for her neighbor. She was a people person in the best sense of the word.
Now, she, the two things that, you know, I always hear about St. Catherine is that she was she the 24th or 25th child in her family?
Yes, I think she was the 24th of 25 children. Her
right.
twin died.
Okay.
And the father was not a particularly wealthy man at all. He was what we might call middle class. He was a wool dyer.
Mm-hmm.
And their house was just a few feet away from this massive Dominican church in Siena, which is still standing, San Domenico.
Okay. And she was a tertiary, right? She was
eventually she became a tertiary. You know, the only real vocation other than family life, motherhood, that was open to women in the Middle Ages was the cloistered contemplative monasteries.
Okay.
And the Dominicans have those.
All right.
And we still have them. We have one in Springfield, Illinois, and one in Farmington Hills, Michigan, and many other places besides. And traditionally, you go in, and you're not seen much after that. You
right.
know, you're cloistered.
Right.
You're cloistered. So St. Catherine had great esteem for that vocation. She sent at least one of her nieces to a nearby Dominican monastery and other women, too, who she felt had that vocation. But it was never her own vocation. She never considered it.
Okay.
In fact, early on as a girl, she wanted to be a priest as a little girl.
Oh.
And when she came to realize that that wasn't possible, then she imagined dressing up as a man and entering a monastery. Apparently, there was a Saint Euphrosyne in the Eastern Church who disguised himself. She was a woman, disguised himself, went into a monastery. I don't think he was ever ordained. But she very much wanted to join the Dominican order because she would see these young Dominican friars in their white habits walking by the front door of her house, probably 50, 100 of them total in the monastery up the hill. And she was really taken by the fact that the Dominican order was founded for the salvation of souls, because that was her thing.
Right.
That's what really preoccupied her in the best sense of the word. And she couldn't think of any other order or any other founder besides St. Dominic whose sole purpose was salvation of souls.
But now, when she entered, that was against the wishes of her parents, wasn't it?
Well, she couldn't enter because, you know, you had to be a man to be a Dominican friar.
Oh, okay.
Friar.
Well, I meant, yeah, right.
Yeah, right. So that was another, you know, source of consternation for her. But in those days, the major religious orders, and the Dominican order was probably, 75 years old or, no, about 100 years old, had groups of lay associates that were tertiaries. They were members of the third order, and many of them were widows. I think they started out more as widows and widowers. Sometimes they were married people. Sometimes they were single people. But in the beginning, I believe they were more widows. And they were old ladies, proper old ladies, who kind of took care of each other and did kind of innocuous acts of charity, you know, in their communities. And they wore a type of Dominican habit. It wasn't the same as the nuns or the friars. People would have known looking at them that they weren't really nuns, but that they belonged to this pious association.
But religious women or nuns existed then, but they were all cloistered?
They were all cloistered, yes.
Okay, so the active sisters that we know today just simply didn't exist.
No, they didn't exist. Okay. And these women, even though they wore a habit, they lived in their own homes.
Okay.
You know, there weren't convents or monasteries for them. But they always wore their habits, and they made promises, and they occasionally got together to pray in the Church of San Domenico in Siena. And that group became her option. You know, she saw, I can be involved in this great apostolate of saving souls if I associate myself as a Third Order member of the Dominicans. But she met opposition there because the old ladies who were in the group had never fathomed the possibility of a young woman like Catherine, you know, a teenager, wanting to be one of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it had never entered their radar.
Right.
And so their initial response was no, because you're probably going to change your mind later on and then break your promises, and that's going to be a source of scandal, and et cetera, et cetera. But she was very persistent.
Mm-hmm.
And one night, St. Dominic appeared to her in a dream, or so she said, and assured her that her wish would be fulfilled, that she would become a member of the Dominican Third Order. And she did. And she received the habit. And like I said, they had no convent, so she had to go back home to her father's house. And she spent the next 3 years of her life, for the most part, not completely, under the steps, under the staircase
wow.
of her father's house. And it became like a monastic cell
wow.
for her.
Boy, well, that, you know, it's so funny because you've already cleared up for me some misconceptions I had about her. I have been under the impression all this time she was a Dominican nun. So this is very interesting. Mm-hmm. So Father, when we come back, we're going to continue this conversation about St. Catherine of Siena and her contributions to the Catholic Church. This is Mary Fiorito. I'm sitting in today for Father Anthony here on listener-supported Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
Portions of the day's programming are reproduced by means of electrical transcriptions or tape recordings.
Get in touch with God.
Get in touch with God.
Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio on.
You've got your radio turned on to Winds of Change, where you can hear about your faith and hear about today's culture through the lens of Christ's teachings with Father Anthony Bush and others. Monday through Friday at noon on AM 750. Keep Winds of Change on by going to ststandschurch.org and click on the radio tab to donate. And Winds of Change offers thanks for your donation.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
All human life is precious, and all humans are created equal, but not all vitamins are created equal. One company's vitamins stand taller than the rest. At For Life Vitamins, we promote health from the womb to the tomb and support the pro-life movement. Dr. Christosik created For Life Vitamins to optimize your healthy habit of taking vitamins and protect the health of unborn children, the infirmed, and the elderly by donating 10% of sales to support Father Bush's life-changing ministry. Go to forlifevitamins.com or call 888-879-1190. Dr. Christosik has helped over 13,000 patients reclaim their health with For Life's vitamins. Go to forlifevitamins.com or call 1-888-879-1190. Simply change your vitamin company and save a life. Go to forlifevitamins.com or call 1-888-879-1190.
Welcome back. This is Mary Fiorito. I'm sitting in today for Father Anthony here on Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ, and I am joined this hour by Dominican Father Thomas McDermott, who is the pastor of St. Vincent Ferrer Parish in, Elmwood Park, in River Forest, Illinois, right next to beautiful Elmwood Park, Illinois. And Father is the author of a book on St. Catherine of Siena, who was one of the doctors of the church. And we've just been discussing St. Catherine's life and how she had kind of a mystical experience with St. Dominic appearing to her and assuring her that she would be admitted as a Dominican tertiary. But she had other mystical experiences as well, Father, didn't she not? Did she receive the stigmata?
Yes, she did. She received the stigmata on a visit to Pisa, and she asked the Lord that it be made invisible because she didn't want it to be a distraction in her working with people. And
in what way did she experience the stigmata? Was it like Padre Pio, where every Friday she would feel the wounds of Christ? Or
it was intense pain all the time, she said.
My goodness.
All the time. And The crucifix before which she received the stigmata is now in the sanctuary in Siena that has
right.
been built around her house. And she described five red rays that mm-hmm. came down from the cross and pierced her
wow.
in five places.
And when you consider all that she did, her many contributions to the church, knowing that she did that a large part of that time, she was in almost constant pain.
Right.
It makes her, you know, an even more compelling figure than she already
yes.
was. But she had some, what she described as a mystical marriage. Can you talk
a little bit
about what that was?
She did. And, you know, incidentally, we wouldn't have known anything about her mystical experiences if her friend, eventual biographer, and confessor appointed by the order, Raymond of Capua, had not ordered her to talk about them.
Yeah.
And then he wrote a life story, a biography, a legenda
mm-hmm.
of her life in which all these things are described. But she never held these things up as requirements for holiness.
Mm-hmm.
And she hardly ever mentioned them. And in the dialogue, which is a treatise really on the spiritual life, She hardly mentions any extraordinary gifts of the Spirit.
Yeah, and you know, so many, you know, holy women of the Church are very much in a similar vein, aren't they? Like, I know Teresa of Lisieux wrote her Story of a Soul Under Obedience. Mm-hmm. She had no intention of writing anything about her little way until her her biological sister, who was also the superior of her community at the time, ordered her to do so.
To do so, yeah.
Under obedience. And I'm a great devotee of the English mystic Carol Houselander, who also had many of these mystical experiences. Mm-hmm. But, you know, she happened to be very close friends with Maisie Ward of the publishing company Sheedon Ward. And it was Maisie Ward who wrote all of them down and shared them. But she, you know, she said, that's not the most important part of my life, is anything like that. She saw them as almost a distraction. So Catherine of Siena seems to be very much.
I think all the authentic mystics, you know, felt that way about the gifts. And then in Catherine's life, I'll get back to the mystical marriage in a moment.
I want to hear about that. Yes.
She experienced all these, you know, like exchange of hearts and just so many mystical experiences. But in her case, you can see clearly in Raymond's account of her life how each of these experiences were not meant for her alone, but represented a broadening and a deepening of her outreach to others. So they had a horizontal aspect that was vital for St. Catherine. It weren't just me and Jesus experiences.
Right. So it was for the benefit of others that she felt that she received it. That's a very interesting way to look at it. It wasn't like a proof of her holiness.
No.
Or a proof of her being a favored person. It was given to her to share with others.
Right. And it's, you know, the mystical life, we now know, it was clarified finally at the Second Vatican Council, is the flowering of baptismal grace.
Mm-hmm.
It's open to everyone.
Right.
So, yes, she did undergo an experience of the mystical betrothals. We don't know if it was I tend to think it was more of an engagement ceremony.
Mm-hmm.
And that's perfectly biblical. You know, in the Old Testament, Yahweh takes as his bride the people of Israel. There are many spousal images of the people of God and the Lord.
And marital images.
Images, And so for a saint like St. Catherine to imagine undergoing a mystical espousal ceremony is kind of a perfection or a fulfillment, a completion of what we see in the Old Testament. And she related what happened and how Mary and Mary Magdalene, I think, was there, but Mary presented, the Virgin Mary presented Catherine to her son, and a ring was put on her finger, and David played the harp. You know.
Like a physical ring.
Well, yes, it was a physical ring.
Okay.
And you know, you couldn't see it.
Right.
You know, she said she could always see it.
Okay. But in the same way as her stigmata, which others couldn't see, but she.
Yes. Yep. Right.
Interesting. Okay. And so did she have experiences where other saints appeared to her and spoke to her?
She did. And she was very influenced by the story of Mary Magdalene and what happened to Mary Magdalene after the Lord's ascension, you know, the rest of her life, how she spent time in France, you know. There's an old legend to that effect that St. Mary Magdalene got into a boat, or she was forced into a boat with a few other disciples, and the boat incredibly landed on the shore of France, and she got out preaching and converted the pagans there and died in a cave. And as a matter of fact, the Dominicans to this day have a tomb, have the remains of someone who they believe, and the Church believes to a certain extent, I guess, it is the remains
as far as we can know. Yeah.
Is Mary Magdalene.
Yeah, that's an interesting sort of patron for her work, you know, in many ways. I think there's a lot of parallels, as you describe them to me, between her life. But
Let me say one thing about Mary Magdalene.
Yes.
This is how Catherine was very free. She was very free. She didn't care what other people said or thought about her.
Mm-hmm.
And she said one day, it's in her letter, she said, I just admire Mary Magdalene so much because she was like a drunken woman that didn't care what other people said.
Well, in that light, if you would ask most people, they would best know St. Catherine from to return the papacy from Avignon back to Rome.
Right.
And she's sort of portrayed sometimes, and depending on whom you're reading, as like the one woman who could talk sense to the crazy men, you know.
Uh-huh.
Can you talk a little bit about that particular episode in her life? Because it is something, you know, she is so well known for, but I'd like you to, if there's any sort of misperceptions or misconceptions people have about that particular gift that she brought to the Church. Mm-hmm. Could you share them with us?
Yeah, you're right. That's the one thing most people, if they know anything about her, know.
They know that.
She went to Avignon in the south of France, where the The popes had resided off and on for something like 70 years, and one of her missions in going there, not the only one, was to persuade Pope Gregory the 11th to go back to Rome, where every pope belonged.
Mm-hmm.
And initially, when she went in, she traveled with about 30 or 60 of her followers, I think, and that's another interesting point we could get to. And Raymond of Capua was there, and he said, you know, the cardinals were not well disposed towards her. She was a woman. The church had had some negative experiences, I guess, in the recent past about women mystics and wandering about and derailing.
So by reputation, she would have been known.
She was known, yes, yeah. And she had written letters to Gregory, and she was famous at this point.
Okay, and how old would she have been when all this was
She would have been
happening?
About 26, I think.
My goodness.
Yeah. So she gets an audience with the Pope. She goes in. In those days, most people sit on a step and turn and face the Pope without looking him in the eye. That was just the protocol. But this young 26-year-old Sienese lady gets up, stands up, looks him in the eye, and says, "Ever since I left my hometown, I have smelled the stench of the papal court, and I continue to smell it now."
My goodness. Well, and that's not very subtle, Father.
No, but see her
sort of
strength
like the drunken
of character,
woman who
yeah.
says exactly what she thinks, okay?
Right. And
did that go over well, that particular analogy?
Initially, no.
No, I wouldn't think so. Okay.
Raymond said, "I was there and I was looking at her face and it was so determined and the room was absolutely quiet."
Uh-huh.
I don't know for how many hours she was there. I know she was there with her followers for several weeks in Avignon. But by the end of the day, she won the Pope and the cardinals over, because this was a person who could criticize the church, because it would always become evident that she loved the church, that she was speaking from the heart of the
right.
church.
And that was her motivation.
And that was her motivation, right. Nothing else. And so other saints had been there, like Bridget of Sweden, to persuade him to go back. But this seemed to be the last straw. Mm-hmm. And the Pope Gregory had a dream that apparently he had not divulged to any other person.
Oh.
And she, Catherine, referred to the contents of this dream, and
I
that
see.
Shocked him. And then he really began listening to her. And then while she was in Siena, just within like 2 or 3 months, I think, after her arrival, he did, in fact, go back to Rome.
Hmm.
But
why was that so important, that the seat of the church be in Rome?
Most of the popes who had resided in France were French, if not all of them. So it was a political thing that they were no longer residing in Rome.
Mm-hmm.
And the pope is, after all, the bishop of Rome. So
right.
every bishop should be in his see city.
Correct.
And that's where the tombs of St. Peter and St. Paul are.
Right. And the Holy Father being the successor to St. Peter— You
belongs
know, it's
in Rome.
Right. It belongs in Rome.
Right.
Right. Yeah. And so sometimes, you know, you will hear people say, like, why was that such a big deal for Catherine? Why did, you know, who cares where the
well,
church
he
is?
He was very unsafe, you know, when he returned
right.
to Rome. He, in fact.
No, I tell me about this, because that's
well,
not something I know about.
He wasn't happy. He he resented St. Catherine of Siena after he got there. He walked into the city of Rome barefoot as a sign of penance.
Hmm.
But he didn't want to see her after that, because things went poorly for him. He had
right.
a lot of opposition. And, of course, he had been gone for a long time and
uh-huh.
had to reestablish his hold on power, I suppose you would say.
Right.
But he wasn't pleased with her.
Yeah, well, I would think not. If you know, sometimes when you know you say something, perhaps intentionally or inadvertently, that convicts someone, that can be very hard to you know establish a relationship with that person,
right.
sort of going
exactly.
forward.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
But I do appreciate what you shared about Catherine's intentions and motivations being only love for the church,
mm-hmm.
and it having nothing to do with self-aggrandizement or self-promotion,
right.
Even though it seems to have really sort of catapulted her even internationally, if not,
right.
you know, she was known, as you said, locally, she was already famous, but this seems to have kind of secured her place in history, if you will.
Yes, yes, it did. And she was hugely in love with the church, and it would be completely alien to her way of thinking for someone to say, "I love Jesus, but not the church."
No, she also was instrumental in establishing peace between Florence, the city of Florence, and the city of Rome.
Yes, and the papacy, to be precise. Siena, her hometown, had a record of being pretty loyal to the papacy, and both cities belonged to the papal states. So their sovereign was the pope, their head of state was the pope, and they had to pay taxes to him. But Florence was always a kind of rascally child of the Pope, and at a certain point, the Pope placed it under interdict, which is a very serious thing, because it means that if you're from Florence and I'm from Siena and I'm owing you $10,000 for buying wheat from you, I don't have to pay it anymore. All the debts are canceled because you're under interdict.
Wow.
So it was a terrible—
That was a significant thing.
Yeah. So— Catherine, that was another reason why she went to Avignon to talk to the Pope, is that she wanted to intercede for the Florentine people, who were, incidentally, were traditional enemies to the people in Siena, but it didn't make any difference to her.
Right.
So that the Pope would be more lenient with them.
Right. Well, Father, this is, our conversation is getting more fascinating by the minute, and I'm sorry, but we have to go to our final break. When we return, we'll conclude our conversation about St. Catherine of Siena and what she can offer to us as modern-day Catholics. This is Mary Fiorito. I'm sitting in today for Father Anthony here on listener-supported Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
St. Stanislaus Kostka Church is the official sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago. Founded by Polish immigrants in the late 1800s, this historic church is more commonly known as St. Stan's. One church, many cultures, in that masses are held in English, Spanish, and Polish. The church is two blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy. St. Stan's has been so prominent in the history of the church in Chicago that the Kennedy Expressway was even built around it. St. Stan's is easy to get to. It is the sanctuary for quiet prayer before the celebrated iconic monstrance. For Mass and confession times and special events, please visit our new website at ststandschurch.org. That's ststandschurch.org. And while you're on the homepage, feel free to click on the donations tab to help in the continuing restoration of St. Stan's.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
How long has it been since you have been to church? Busy schedule? Work? Or just lost interest? To be Catholic is not just merely attending Mass as just another weekend activity to be checked off the to-do list. Participation in the sacred liturgy gives you the opportunity to be intimately connected to Christ through the Holy Eucharist. You can also cleanse yourself of sin through the Sacrament of Reconciliation as a baptized Catholic. Come before the iconic monstrance to be in Christ's presence in the sacred silence of the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy. St. Stanislaus Kostka Church is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. St. Stan's is just off the Kennedy, two blocks north of Division on Noble. Come back to Christ through the sacred liturgy and his gift of the sacraments at St. Stan's.
Welcome back. This is Mary Fiorito. I'm sitting in today for Father Anthony here on Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ. And if you are just joining us, I am joined here in the studio by Father Thomas McDermott, who is the pastor of St. Vincent Ferrer Parish in River Forest, Illinois. He is the author of a book on Catherine of Siena called Catherine of Siena. But also, Father, you have another book called Filled with All the Fullness of God, which is like an introduction to Catholic spirituality. But before we get back into our conversation about St. Catherine, can you talk a little bit about that book and how listeners can get it if they'd like to? Because that's a really good treatise on Catholic spiritual life.
Well, thank you for saying so, Mary.
Yes,
it's called Filled with All the Fullness of God. It was published in London, but it's available here in the United States from Amazon. And it's only about 100 pages. And what I try to do is to retrieve the tradition in the Catholic Church of Catholic spiritual theology or spirituality. And so I look at a lot of the doctrines, that simply means the truths of our faith, that are very important to Catholic spirituality, such as the human person being made in the image and the likeness of God, such as grace, such as the virtues, such as the gifts of the Holy Spirit, such as the importance of having a correct idea of God. Otherwise, if we have a defective idea of God or what it means to be human, we're going to love God and love ourselves wrongly, as we see in radical terrorism today. That's exactly what's happened. It's based on a wrong belief about God and what it means to be human. So all of these thoughts, it's a kind of dense book, are found in this little 100-page book that I wrote, Filled with All the Fullness of God. And it's... And then I also mentioned the lived spiritualities which derive or kind of have spun off from these truths or these doctrines of our faith. So there's really there really isn't anything like it, and it's but it's a retrieval of our rich patrimony as Catholics.
That in some respects, you know, has sort of been in, incorporated a lot into modern Protestant spirituality, you know, especially I like how you begin the book in the introduction by talking about Jesus saying, I've come that they might have life and have it more abundantly. And, you know, some of the very Protestant popular preachers right now, Joel Osteen and others, really have this sort of kind of abundant life teaching and philosophy that Jesus wants you to live an abundant, happy life. And so I'm glad that you've sort of, you know, captured that back and given the Catholic perspective on all of that, because I think it's very helpful because it's really something that is very much, we were talking off air a little bit at the beginning of the show about how, you know, we know many Catholics who go to Catholic Mass. They certainly don't miss Mass on Sunday, but they'll also listen to a Joel Osteen or to another, you know, a Ravi Zacharias or another Protestant pastor. Because of these sort of abundant life messages that, frankly, the Catholic Church was talking about first. Your book is a very helpful treatise on that. So, again, it's called Filled with All the Fullness of God by Father Thomas McDermott. And it is, I know it's available on Amazon in both print form and on Kindle, yes?
Yes, right.
Okay, so terrific. So if you were interested in that particular aspect of Father's work, you might want to look into that. But today, we're really focused on St. Catherine of Siena, who is, you know, it's funny, there is sort of a one-dimensional, I guess, sort of Catholic school book, kid book on saints sort of image of her out there, you know, that she's the one who got the papacy back from Avignon to Rome. But there's so many other interesting aspects of her life, Father, including her very interesting circle of friends. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yes. Well, I think it says a lot about St. Catherine of Siena. She was a lover of solitude. She was a great mystic and prayer, but at the same time, she was this wonderful people person, and she shows that the two are not opposed by any means. And young people, of course, she died at the age of 33, so she was really a young person most of her life. Young person, her age, and sometimes older, simply enjoyed being around her. And stories abound about how people would come with woeful problems and crying bitterly and all the rest. And within a few minutes after meeting her and listening to her, they would leave even laughing, you know.
Wow.
And she prayed a lot for her friends and was concerned a lot for her friends. And she had this community of disciples. And in fact, they were derisively called the Catrinati by her enemies.
Oh, interesting.
Which means the Catherinized ones, okay. The ones that have kind of come under her spell.
My goodness.
And we think they numbered as many as 60, but any given time, she'd probably be surrounded by 30 young people. And she herself was probably an illiterate for most of her life.
Now, that I find is fascinating.
It is fascinating.
How do we have the dialogues if she was illiterate?
She dictated.
Answer me that.
She dictated.
Interesting.
Right.
Okay.
In the case of the dialogue, she would go into a mystical state.
Okay.
Some people might call it a trance. And she believed that she was hearing the voice of the Lord, and she would repeat what he was saying. And her disciples who could read and write, all of them could, you know, would take down what she was saying. Same thing with her letters. Her letters were written in a full state of consciousness.
Okay.
So, and these 60 or so young people included priests, not just Dominican priests, but Franciscans and Augustinians. And they were almost all drawn from the noble families in Siena. She was not from the nobility. That's why she didn't.
But she was sort of middle class, upper middle class, yes. And her father was a merchant.
Yeah, I would say, middle class, not even upper.
Okay.
Yeah, she didn't read or write, and he was a wool dyer, and but she attracted to herself these cultivated young people, and they just enjoyed being with her. And some of them went on to be poets, and some went on to be monks and priests and nuns and married people and all the rest. But it says a lot about her, the kinds of people who were attracted to her. It was really the cream of the crop of young people. And there's that saying, you know, show me your friends and I'll tell you who you are. Well, she had the very best of friends who just thought the world of her.
Right, yeah. And, you know, you see that again. We talked about a little earlier in the show, you know, people who have authentic mystical experiences generally tend to have the same types of reactions to those. And you also see a lot of the great saints and you know, people who are really examples and models of holiness, who also attract holiness and goodness attracts people naturally. Without, right. You know, I'm thinking too of sort of similarly, Blessed Chiara Luce Badano, who was a young member of the Focolare movement, who died when she was only 17. But her, when she was dying of cancer, her friends coming to her hotel or her hospital room, rather, in Italy, they thought they were going to cheer her up, and they would come out feeling more, you know, joyful and happy and laughing because they had gone to visit her. So again, yeah. Just attracting really good people to you, I think, is a, you know, is a sign of that holiness. And are there any of the Cateranati, is that what they're called? I'm thinking of Illuminati, which is not
Cateranati.
The Cateranati that would be known to people, the names that we would recognize.
Well, Raymond of Capua, who was right. A blessed, he was beatified. He went on to become Master General of the Dominican Order a few years after Catherine's death. Did very well as Master General, did a lot of good. He'd probably be the most well-known. One of them possibly became a bishop, another one. And the rest, one became the head of the Carthusian Order.
Wow. I mean, that's, you know, those are significant figures in the church then.
Yeah, right.
If you have someone who's began an order just because, you know, initially they started by being a friend of yours. You know, I'm always interested in what saints are the patrons of, you know, mm-hmm. and I like to find like the really weird, quirky things. You know, patron saint of beekeepers. Is there one? There must be.
I think St. Catherine might have something to do with that, but I'm not sure.
Well, she is one of the things, a couple of the things. She is patron of things you would imagine, but also for women who have had miscarriages is one. But also, she is the patroness of people ridiculed for their piety.
Oh, I didn't know
so,
that.
So, yes. And what, you know, so I just wanted to ask you, I hope I'm not putting you on the spot here, but what aspects of her life would have, you know, made her sort of a fit for that particular patronage?
Well, you know, she quoted Saint. She used the example of Mary Magdalene, as I said earlier, mm-hmm. about admiring her because she was like a drunken woman who didn't care what anyone said.
Right.
And Catherine would go out. Once she met a mob in Florence, and they were there to kill her for political reasons. And she went out and met the head thug at the gate and said, "Here I am. I'm Catherine. I'm the one you're looking for."
Mm-hmm.
And Raymond Capua's account said that they just basically dissolved. Mm, they just couldn't stand before her.
Right,
anymore.
Like Christ walking into the, you know, just walking away through the mob that wanted to kill him sort of thing. And, you know, there's just, I mean, it's, she, you have made me even more interested in her than I was. She is one of the, was she the first female doctor of the church? I know she is a doctor of the church. Was she the first woman with Teresa of Avila precede
Well,
her?
They're together. They okay. were, received doctorates together, Teresa of Avila and St. Catherine of Siena, only in 1970.
Right. So that's,
Paul
right.
VI was,
but prior to that, there were no female,
female
so again, you kind of look, it's interesting the way the church has chosen the women doctors of the church. You have Catherine of Siena, who was illiterate, who was mm-hmm. now, and then Thérèse of Lisieux, who died at 24 and wrote this book that the sisters who lived with her didn't think they'd have enough information or anything interesting enough to fill up her obit. And she winds up being one of the great spiritual teachers of the church.
Yeah, exactly.
So I'm, Father, I'm so grateful for the time you took to discuss. Can you tell us, I know that your parish where you pastor, St. Vincent's, has kind of an interesting Mass and confession schedule. Can you just share that quickly?
Yes, we have Mass every day, well attended at 12 noon and 7 in the morning, Monday through Friday, and confessions before Mass at 11:30.
Okay.
Everyone's welcome.
Yes, and that's at the corner of Lathrop and North Avenues in River Forest, Illinois. Well, thank you for joining us for this fascinating hour. This has been Mary Fiorito sitting in for Father Anthony on Winds of Change.
What's there to say when the world makes no sense? Do we search deeper truths or sit on the fence? Can you see? Can you see? Can you see the winds have changed? We marvel and flatter such meaningless thoughts. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
What's that you say when right?